I woke up in the recovery room and I began planning the next year. Hi, folks. This is John Zombro. I'm your host at the Lifetime Athlete Podcast, and this is episode number 201. And I'm going to share the story of my recent shoulder surgery with you. And I've got a couple of goals in doing so. This will be a rambling tale about that journey, and I might provide you with some information and some amusement, but also I want to offer up some advice for anyone who is potentially going to be facing a surgery. Now, of course, there are lots of types of surgeries, including emergent ones and the acute or traumatic issues, which we can't really plan for. And those are unfortunate circumstances, to say the least, but we're wonderful. It is wonderful for us that we're blessed to live in this country where our acute care system is the best in the world, and it's magnificent. But many of us, particularly as lifetime athletes, are not going to get through this journey without some things happening to these beastly bodies of ours. And this wasn't the first injury. I've had a number of injuries myself, and it wasn't my first surgery. I've had a couple of those as well. But this one being the most recent and fresh in my mind, I want to share that experience with you. And if you're just joining the show and you want to jump back to episode 200, where I talked about the history or the etiology of this injury or condition that I had, you can certainly do that. But I'll give a few quick points here as well. And it turns out that I had a condition in my shoulder, which is a congenital issue known as dysplastic retroversion. In other words, almost like a birth defect, if you will, where the shoulder didn't form properly or completely, and it really was destined not to make it through a lifetime. It just probably wasn't going to last. And so the normal wear and tear of life eventually eroded it to the point where I had problems. And I didn't know I had this problem, ironically, until, at age 57, I fell, slipped on the ice and fell on concrete. And, that was the straw that broke the camel, or in this case, the shoulder's back. And, set off a lot of inflammation and an acceleration of this arthritic degeneration. And so that's kind of what had happened. And There were some pluses and minuses in my whole story. Again, with the way the shoulder was formed, it probably wasn't going to last a lifetime, even if I didn't use it very much. In fact, it's an interesting thing there. If you don't use your body and your joints enough, you actually have quite a bit of acceleration of cartilage loss, even more so than an active person, because that activity is necessary for synovial fluid movement and joint nourishment. So, interestingly enough, my training probably helped me more than it hurt me. And some of the experts that I had consulted with had noted that my tissue health, my rotator cuff, my muscles, tendons and bones, were generally very good to excellent. It's just, unfortunately, I had this joint that had gone south or sour. And, that's okay. You make peace with these things. And fortunately, in this time, this day and age, we can seek out the help of experts and get some things done and have some hope. And that's kind of where I'm at now. I'm certainly not discouraged at this point. I'm relatively optimistic that I can make a fairly good recovery. I'm not delusional about what I'll be doing, but I think I can still be very healthy and fit and quite athletic moving forward. Quite a bit of things to do over this next year. And that was what I was thinking of as I awoke in the recovery room. And so I'll tell you a little bit about what all that experience was like for me, and then I'll get right into just some tips that I would offer up, either from my experience over several decades working with people in a rehabilitative capacity who have had surgeries, and also with my own somewhat limited but personal experience. And so here I am. I'm laying there, and shortly after I realize where I'm at and start thinking about, okay, that step's done, let's get on the next part. The nursing staff came in and visited, checked on my vitals and all that, and things looked good. And so I asked the nurse if if I could take a few laps and around, you know, the hallway. And he said, sure. And so he helped me get up and get dressed. And it really wasn't too difficult to get moving and did a few laps. And it's very important for just getting your respiratory system functioning again, and also getting the muscles pumping and reducing the risk of blood clots, all those things. That early movement's important. And I knew that, so I was pretty motivated. And of course, I wasn't trying to get the best patient award, but I think some of my preparation and enthusiasm was noted. And so, you know, there's kind of what happened. Physician came in, he visited with me, talked about what had happened, and it went pretty well, went quite well, actually. And so that was kind of where I was when I was in recovery. And I just kind of reflected back on what had happened. Well, I had kind of gone on this destination surgical vacation, if you will. And, you know, I live in Montana, and I was going down to Colorado to work with a specialist team on this case. And so my wife and I decided to drive instead of fly for several reasons. One, it was a great time of the year, and we thought we'd make a scenic tour on the front end. And then on the back end, it looked like it was going to be actually a little bit more convenient for me in my post-operative state to ride in a car than to deal with airports and a couple of plane changes. And so that's kind of how we came up with this. So there I was. I had gotten down the day before my procedure, and we got comfortable in our hotel and all of that. And I'm very impressed with how this type of healthcare can work. Again, if this is an elective orthopedic surgery, you know, and you're not in an emergent situation, you do have some time to plan. I did all of my preparation via telehealth, and I'm a big advocate for that. It worked great for me. And then the morning of my procedure, I went into the clinic. I had an office appointment, got a final set of x-rays, met the team, and the team included, my surgeon, several physician assistants, athletic trainers, nurses, and physical therapists. And that's pretty cool how this was done, where those people were essentially assigned to my case and really managed it to perfection. I can't say enough about how well that went and my gratitude for that. So, I was instructed to take my final disinfecting shower. That's some special soaps I'd been using for several days, and that is an infection control measure that they've instituted, which really helps cut down on post-surgical issues. And I reported to the surgical center around lunchtime, got in, got prepped, and and then underwent this surgical procedure, which really is worth describing for the audience. So this dysplastic retroversion that I had kind of came with a package that had quite a bit of arthritic degeneration, bone spurs, and dysfunction in my shoulder. So range of motion was limited or quite stiff. It was weak and painful. I also had a tear in my biceps tendon. So essentially, the wizardry of how all this got dealt with was, first thing they did, and this is all in a very elaborate operating room setup, which I got to get a brief tour of before the lights went out for me. You're in there with the team, and there is 3D software, big screens, on the monitors of your diagnostics, and then the overlay of how, all this is going to work. So there's a surgical plan. And they started off by, going in and dealing with the scapula or the shoulder blade first. And one of the things that I'd been originally told was, well, I needed to not get an anatomic replacement, but a reverse replacement, because the shoulder blade was just so misshapen. Then I was also told by, again, another, highly skilled professional, that it would be best to just get a hemiarthroplasty and get half my shoulder replaced and not even mess with that crooked shoulder blade, because it just wouldn't be easy to get the components placed appropriately, and they were going to be destined to wear out sooner. Well, eventually, I found You know, this specialist, he really works with my kind of case. And so they went in and instead of trying to ream the shoulder blade straight, and by the way, I should say that, you know, this is orthopedic surgery. And so there's a lot of tools that look like fancy and expensive versions of the one I have in my workshop. And you know, you got to face that if that's what you're doing. So they couldn't really ream or grind on that thing to get it straight. So they basically just cut it off as straight as possible. And then this is where things get really interesting. You know, remove the top of the humerus or arm bone to, you know, have that be ready to receive its component. But some of the harvested bone was then used to be shaped as a wedge and placed on the glenoid fossa of the shoulder blade to get things straightened back up, to kind of build back up that area that was deficient. And then what they do is they use a polyethylene implant. So it's kind of a plastic cup, if you will. It's a high grade or high tension product. And with pins and adhesive, they put that into place. And then they turn their attention to the humerus, and that's where, you know, there's some drilling down into your arm bone, and then they can implant and make sure they get straight and tension appropriately this stainless steel shaft and ball that went in. And that doesn't have any adhesive in it, but it just has some barbs on it, which the bone grows into and around. So that was kind of what they did to basically get the anatomy restructured, and then they turn their attention to the soft tissues. And so first thing was to remove the longhead biceps tendon from the top of the shoulder and then bring it down and out slightly, attaching it to the pectoralis major tendon. And that was done, you know, via a suturing procedure. Then, in putting the cuff back together, you know, where it had to be opened up at the rotator interval and releasing the subscapularis, they took another one of those pieces of bone and basically increased the tension on that slightly, drilling a hole and using a bone plug with a glucose polymer screw, which is kind of like almost like rock candy. It's a hard sugar screw that eventually dissolves, allowing that bone to form the union, and then you have less hardware, you know, less metal inside of you. So that was what they did to not only put things back together, but increase tension for proper alignment, because my soft tissues had formed around this dysfunctional joint over all those decades. Then the attention was turned to the joint capsule and some releasing and basically cutting some accordion cuts on the end that needed to be opened up, or the side, and then also suturing or tightening up where, you know, we needed to get the anatomy pulling and pushing correctly on this this new structure. So that was a lot that was done, and I knew that going in. I had absolutely no surprises, but it all went fairly well. Found that out coming out, and so there I was. I woke up in recovery, and I visited with the surgeon. He told me that was what had happened. And I said, well, you know, there's only a couple folks who had complex procedures today. You guys will spend the night in recovery. Everybody else gets to go back to wherever they're going back to. Usually it's their hotel. And so I spent the night in the hospital, and that wasn't too bad. Well, actually, wasn't bad at all, to be honest. You know, it was fairly comfortable. Through the night, long about the time that it was supposed to, the nerve block started to wear off and my sensation started to come back. And so that's when the nursing staff started me on my medication regime. And I'll talk more about that in a moment. But, got me up at about 6 o'clock, brought me a coffee, offered me breakfast. I didn't really feel like I wanted it at that time. I'd eaten dinner the night before. And so I was, escorted down to rehab. So I went down to physical therapy at 7 and had my initial session. Also met with some of the staff, and they checked on my medical status, make sure I didn't have any, signs of complications or infections or other things. And I went from there. I went out for another coffee with my wife before I went back to the hotel, and then, you know, essentially convalesced for the rest of the day. Next day, kind of did the same thing, had another medical checkup and rehab appointment, and then was officially discharged. And so from there, we spent another night, and then the following day got up and left. And this was a total time. It would have been about a 12-hour drive, but we had elected not to try to burn it in one day. First of all, I wouldn't want to do that to my wife since she was doing all the driving on the way back. And secondly, it seemed like it might be easier, and it was for me in my post-operative condition to, you know, ride in a vehicle for, you know, half that amount of time, half a day or so, and then have a nice rest and then, you know, get home. And so that's how we did it. And not uncommon for people these days doing these things. And so overall, a good journey. I'm pleased to have made it to where I'm now back, you know, on the podcast. And by the way, you know, obviously things have been going on the last couple of weeks have kind of changed my scheduling slightly, and I think I'm going to get back on. So forgive me if you can, and thank you for being with me through this. Well, I think the first thing I'll tell you about is medications. So generally, you're prescribed a set almost like package of medications following one of these procedures, and you can present them in any order, but you know, you're going to get prescribed a daily aspirin to take for several weeks at least, and again, that helps with blood clot prevention, you know, as well as doing your exercises and wearing your compressive socks or stockings. And in addition to that, then for pain, you're usually given some type of narcotic. It can vary. And of course, you know that you know, there's the generic name of drugs as well as the trade name. But I had received some oxycodone as my prescription. I'd also received a muscle relaxant and an anti-nausea drug and a stool softener. So that was kind of the package. And what I had elected to do, first of all, was not try to be a tough guy or anything like that. But I said, you know what I need to do is I need to stay stable and make it home. So for 4 days, so 2 days there and 2 days on the road, I took the medications exactly as they were prescribed. So that meant several times per day, I was taking the oxycodone, you know, trying to knock that pain down a tad. And then in the evening, a muscle relaxant for sleeping. In the morning, just prophylactically, the anti-nausea drug, and then once a day, the stool softener. So that's kind of how, I think I didn't leave anything out. That's kind of how all that worked. And to be honest, it did work. You know, I can't say that I was in, you know, euphoria or comfort, but, you know, I was able to function and manage. And that was really what the goal was. So talking about those meds a little bit, it's really interesting to me. I've had two previous surgeries before. Those surgeries were knee surgeries, and I didn't use narcotics with those because I just didn't need them. I didn't feel like I needed them, and that's kind of how that worked out. But for this one, you know, more work was done. I was advised strongly to take them. I had the travel circumstances, and I knew there was going to be probably more discomfort. So I said, yeah, I'm definitely going to take them. Well, many of you probably already know this, but the effects are not pronounced. It's not like you're, you know, in, to me at least, in total la la land and you're numb or anything like that. But you know, it does take the edge off and take things down. But at the very same time, it's basically slowing down or dulling all of your function, your systemic function, your neurologic function. Not an experience I wanted or I would recommend for anyone. I felt like I was peripherally participating in the world and living in a foggy cushion. And I knew it was probably necessary, but I was, it was just not something I was all that psyched up about. And so very interesting. So then I think I'll keep talking about the narcotics because I just had decided, and you know, again, they recommend that you kind of wean yourself back. And I said, once I get home, I know I've got, you know, plenty of, I've got an ice machine that I rented and some ice packs and, you know, got some Tylenol. I'm going to be fine, you know, or at least I'm going to make it on this. And so I just chucked everything and said, you know, good enough. So I just still take the daily aspirin, but got rid of that stuff. Well, here's the interesting thing. Only 4 days on narcotics and those things are strongly habit-forming and addictive. And, you know, I didn't find myself craving them, but there was a withdrawal effect that was quite pronounced. You know, probably came on, about 24 hours after I'd taken the last one, just a massive headache, and didn't really seem to respond to doing anything like having a coffee or taking a Tylenol. And that lasted for, gosh, I want to say six to eight hours. And then, you know, and then it faded, and I could almost feel this strange thing. I like the body's kind of releasing from that. And so that's good. You know, without being too TMI here, well, that sounds redundant in saying that, but the stool softeners serve a purpose, you know, and because those narcotics are really slowing down your GI function, you know, you need those, and that slight laxative effect. But I would still add that I would not describe my function as robust during the 4 days that I was taking those drugs. And upon discontinuance, things returned to normal quite cathartically, shall I say. And again, very interesting to me as an experiment, because like, I don't want too much of that in my existence. And I certainly can appreciate the hold that those things get on people and the problems that they cause. All the information that we hear about in public health messages is indeed true. So we know there's a place for such drugs, but we've got to be very careful and respectful in using them. So, okay, rambled on a little bit there, but I felt like it was important just to share that. And, you know, like I alluded to, I'm in a good positive mindset. I've got a number of weeks, it's going to depend on some things, but it's going to be 4 to 6 weeks where I've got to wear my sling pretty much 24/7. So sleeping with it too, and that's a drag. Got to sleep on my back in a slight inclined position. There's some discomfort there. I'm still not able to sleep through the night. Got to take some breaks, but you know, things are happening. And in a rehab capacity, just passive stuff only for quite a few weeks. So I'll probably save another episode of this to kind of talk about that, how I'm following very specifically the protocol that was recommended for me, but then also over time, how, you know, I can start to build in some of my things I want to do and all that. So we'll get to that. So here is now what I think is just some good tips or advice that I can offer up for anyone who is potentially facing one of these elective surgeries. And I know I wanted to look up the statistics on this before the show, but I did not. But I'm going to tell you that in all probability, it's got to be better than half of us are going to need to have something like this done at some point. You're just probably not going to make it without it. So, all right. So really one of the things postoperatively you want to do is you want to get through this first week. And the first week after surgery is definitely a time where mostly healing is taking place and your body is recovering from the insult that was surgery. You know, even if surgery, quote unquote, addresses and fixes some issues, it's an injury in the moment. And quite a traumatic one when you think of not only what's done, but also the effects of anesthesia, and even just sometimes the anxiety that anyone might experience. And so normal to feel exhausted, go with that. Don't fight it. Do anything you can to rest and restore. That's what you want to do in that first week. And then here's two kind of like subtopics of that I would say. Explore before your surgery some art of meditation. You don't have to take this to any guru level by any means, but if you can learn to focus breathing and either empty your mind or concentrate your mind on only one thought, that's very helpful. And I did find myself a few times breathing through some waves of discomfort, and it is effective. You know, I'm no firewalker, but again, I would highly recommend having that as a tool in your toolbox. It will help you. You can even do some tests where, you know, you look at your blood pressure, resting heart rate, and, you know, these things do matter. The other thing I would say is, you know, you're going to want to expect some amount of discomfort after any major surgery, at least for a while. There are a few exceptions where people either get lucky or they are really tough, but I'm going to say that most of us are going to have a pain experience. You know, surgical discomfort, you could say whatever you want to say, it's going to be there. And so here's my advice. Don't inject emotion into your pain experience. I know that's not easy, and certainly I'm not being cruel in suggesting this, but the minute you start getting emotional about the pain, you know, you'll start hyperventilating, start panicking, and your actual registration of the experience just worsens and your ability to deal with it decreases. So try not to be emotional. And, you know, no matter what kind of personality you have, just try to be as close to ice as you can, and it's going to help you. Now, in terms of what you do preoperatively, my first advice would be get as healthy as you can. And what I mean by that, of course, is, hey, you know, get your health measures looking good, your blood work and your blood pressure, your heart rate, get plenty of sleep. And going in healthy will help you so much because you're not going to be impacted as forcefully by all those things, and you'll bounce back faster. It is proven. That was my experience, and that was something that I talked about with the medical staff quite a bit. And, you know, I'm not that special. I'm not going to say they were like super impressed with me, but at least, you know, they felt like things went well for me because I was prepared. Now, the next thing as well, getting prepared also means getting as able-bodied as possible. And everyone's circumstance is different, and I respect that. But if you can train the rest of your body, you know, in terms of what you can do with resistance exercise and mobility and working your cardiovascular system, again, it depends on, you know, what's going on. Is it your lower extremity, upper extremity, your spine, blah, blah, blah. But yeah, do what you can, because that fitness level, not only does that contribute to your health, but that fitness level helps you to just not be knocked out and be able to get up out of bed and move around. And it's not a big deal. Care for yourself, dress yourself. And I even found that, like, you know, doing some, you know, trunk training, core strengthening, whatever buzzword you like, super helpful, because, you know, I can't use my arm, you know, to move either objects or myself around for 4 to 6 weeks at a minimum, given this complexity of what I've had done. And so I am able to do like a full sit-up laying in bed and get out of bed. And then I can, you know, use various hinging and squatting and lunging positions, which we're always talking about here, to safely negotiate daily activities and self-care. And also it's just so important. So I would say, if you're having a surgery and you're able, not only should you look at your nutrition, your sleep, your relationships and get healthy, but you should train and get as fit as you possibly can going in. It just makes your comeback so much faster. In fact, I would say this, you know, for 35 years working in human performance, the people that recovered the most quickly and the most fully from surgical procedures are the ones that fit those categories, the healthy and well-conditioned people, by hands down, by far. And then there's, you know, a group of people that, let's say, they got suddenly motivated after the procedure. Well, they did okay, but it took them quite a bit longer and it wasn't as easy. And then there are the people that were train wrecks going in and were non-compliant on the way out, not always having very good outcomes. And so I just want to make sure I mention that. And if you need me to be a resource for that, you know, you can reach out. Sometimes I do coaching consultations on this stuff alone, just doing pre-op preparation. And it's incredibly valuable, at least in my opinion, and those who do it share that back with me. So, okay, the next thing you want to do is, well, again, this is personality specific, but be patient if you can. You got to have a long-term view, because in the short run, the short view, things are going to be tough at times, and you're allowed to get down once in a while. That's okay. But also, you know, you got to keep plugging. You got to be patient. It really is how this game works. The body will amaze you, though, because if you're healthy and fit and you're doing all these things, it's not quite a blip on the screen. But, you know, you can look back on some of these things. It wasn't that bad after a few days or weeks, and then it didn't take too long to get going and feeling well again. So, yeah, just know that. I would also say, as a word of advice, just expect everything to take more time and more energy. You know, what it doesn't matter what it is. You know, if you've got, you know, a leg that's in a dressing or a brace or a cast, or, you know, you've got an arm in a sling. Again, you could start making a long list here. It just takes more work, more thought, more problem solving to do a simple thing. It takes more time, more energy. And so if you expect that, you kind of make peace with it. Maybe you don't overschedule yourself. That's very important. In fact, you know, I got back to work, the day after I returned home, first full day that I was home, but I only worked a half day, and I'm that's what I'm doing for basically the next 2 weeks. Fortunately, work from home and have had planned for that and had a lot of things set up, but it's tough after anything, any accident or surgery, any trauma to the body, to give your best. And if you just know that, it's going to be very beneficial to you. Now, here's one that I want to touch on, and I was reminding myself of this quite a bit, and it's this: don't be a jerk. And so, okay, look, you know, these things can be stressful, and there is pain, but don't let that get the better of you so that suddenly you're treating people who mean well and are trying to help you in almost all cases with less respect and maintenance of dignity than they deserve. It's so important. And so, you know, don't make yourself look like a crummy person. You know, remind yourself, try not to be a jerk. And again, there's always a little bit of leeway in these things because people understand, of course. They're going to cut you a little bit of slack. Just don't take too much of that. So, okay. Now, here's the thing, coming back on the pain, just as an advice for folks, really just stay ahead of it for the first few days. Whatever that means to you, you know, use your ice, take more naps, take your meds, because what happens is post-surgical inflammation peaks several days after the surgery. And so you're going to possibly, especially as the effects of anesthesia wear off, you're probably going to feel worse the first couple days than maybe like that first day, believe it or not. And so by staying ahead of the pain on whatever your pain control regimen is, you know, you're going to be well served. If you get behind and then the pain really spikes and you've got to scramble, it's not instantaneous. It sometimes is a day or two before things get back under control. And you just don't need that misery. So spare yourself by all means. I'd also say that I have a simple statement. I guess you could call it doctrine. I've came up with it long ago. And I say this to almost everybody that I work with or that I know is having an injury or a surgical procedure and some rehab, and, you know, they might benefit from this experience. It's this: be conservative early and be aggressive late. And, you know, it's self-explanatory, but early on, you know, your main goal is restoration of health and basic function and getting your pain, you know, down and ultimately gone. And then later you can really be more tuned in to, you know, function and restoration of all your physical parameters and training. Not to say there's not some overlap, and we do need, you know, light therapy early on, that there's a great benefit to doing that, but not to be, you know, too aggressive. I think that's really important early on. I've done it myself. I did a rehab journey incorrectly once, and I felt pretty good. I thought I'd just kind of jump a few steps and push it. And this was following one of my knee surgeries, and I should have known better, but my knee blew up and got stiff, and I lost 3 weeks in my journey easily, just from not being conservative enough early. You want to be consistent, but conservative. And then as far as aggressive late goes, obviously work with, you know, your healthcare provider. So, you know, if you have a surgery, you're probably going to get a protocol from your physician. It may be somewhat generic, but then they'll probably add some specifics to your case. And you really want to follow that. You also want to make sure that that's, you know, what your rehab professionals are doing. And then over time, as things open up, there's much more leeway for interpretation and change. Having said that, I'd say work with your team. It's good to establish a team if you can, you know, as far as relationships goes with those people that, you know, you're hiring to help you. They don't have to be your best buddy or anything like that, but, you know, you want to have good communication. And I think the best providers, caregivers, etc., you know, have that in place with what they're doing. And then, you know, your responsibility also is to, you know, do your part and let them know what's going on. And yeah, it's just good. It's good to work with the team, and communication is a big, big part of that. Now, most of us, and I consider myself lucky in this case, will have a caregiver. It could be temporary in some instances, but there's probably someone who helps you, you know, gets you food and drink and makes sure that you're comfortable and drives you home from your surgical vacation. In my case, that's my wife. And so I'm, you know, really grateful and appreciative and indebted to her. And she is a saint, not just because she lives with me. But what I would like to say here is reward your caregiver. You know, let them know how much you appreciate what they're doing. And, you know, when the time is right for you, you know, a gesture and a gift or several, that's a great idea. And so hopefully we get that chance to, you know, be that person, you know, for them as well. And it's really important to be of service in this world. In fact, I feel really fortunate. I'm glad I got back to work and I'm helping some people with some of their goals. It feels good because I want to give back. You know, people just helped me, and it's just so important to do that. In fact, you know, talking about these shoulders, it's really an interesting thing for me, because I'm going to say over 35 years, I've worked with maybe not thousands, but over 1,000 people with shoulder issues, injuries, surgeries, and the like. I would probably say several hundred of those were cases that had some similarity to my own. And then maybe a dozen, coming down even further, were very similar. And yet, it's humbling to know that, you know, my journey is just an N of one, and it's unique. And I always try to remind myself that for other people too. It's like we always want to be listening and being aware of how things are going with those people that we're working with and that we're around, and anything we can do to make their journey better, I think it helps, you know, us and society in the long run. So that was a lot, you know, that I wanted to put out there, you know, from the heart, off the cuff. And I just, hey, thank you for listening. I won't belabor this topic in the podcast, but I am going to come back in some time and talk specifically about rehabilitation from shoulder injuries and surgeries, both generically and what I'm doing, and then some long-term training modifications that I'll make, and even maybe some proprietary ideas that I've developed that I want to share for you guys. I'll probably put some of that on the YouTube channel as well, so that, you know, you have a reference or a resource if you need it. So probably enough for today from me, guys. Thank you so much. I do appreciate you. If you are enjoying this kind of content, let me know. Give me a comment. I'm always happy to respond to that. And if you want to support the pod, by all means, you know, like, share, and subscribe. And there's plenty of great merch on the website, as well as my coaching services and my new book, Animal Fit, which can help you to unleash your inner beast and unlock your athletic potential. So more on all of those things later. Until next time, this is Coach John Zombro signing out from the Lifetime Athlete Podcast.